Okay, as we look at our overall chart here, just to see where we're at here, we're working our way through, and tonight we're going to be in chapters 16 to 20, so we're still right in this area. Jehoiakim, as during Jehoiakim's reign as king, and remember, Josiah was a good king, Jehoahaz, Jehoiakim, Jehoiachin, and Zedekiah were all bad kings. Nothing good about them at all. And two of them, Jehoahaz and Jehoiachin, only reigned for 3 months each. So they were very, had, you know, little influence, but they were bad. What influence they did have was a bad influence. So that's where we're at tonight. And now you can flip it over now, Peter, to number six. Number six, and I'll show you which one it is here when you get there.
Right
here. There you go. Okay. Jeremiah chapter 16 this evening. Jeremiah chapter 16. And we're going to be looking at parables and persecution. Parables and persecution, chapter 16 to 20. Jeremiah's restrictions we start out with in number 16. And God gives him some restrictions here. And as we dig into them, look at them, some of them seem a bit strange, but then you look at it, there's a reason behind it. God was using these things to try to teach and use him as an illustration. Verse number 1 says, "And the word of the Lord came and also unto me, saying, Thou shalt not take thee a wife, neither shalt thou have sons or daughters in this place." So Jeremiah was told he couldn't get married. And probably a frustration to him, is that, you know, he started out as a young man, and, you know, about 20 years has passed so far. And God says, no, you can't get married. And the reason for that is, he explains as we move our way down in the next verse. "For thus saith the Lord, concerning the sons and daughters, the sons and concerning the daughters that are born in this place, and concerning their mothers that bear them, and concerning their fathers that begat them in this land, they shall die of grievous deaths. They shall not be lamented, neither shall they be buried, but they shall be as dung upon the face of the earth, and they shall be consumed by the sword, by the famine, and their carcasses shall be meat for the fowls of heaven and for the beasts of the earth." All right, so God was showing the people with Jeremiah's life as an example, you're not going to get married, and people say, "Jeremiah, why don't you get married?" Well, because I know what's going to happen. And God told me not to get married because it's better not to get married in a situation like this, because in our situation, in just a few years, the place is going to be overtaken by the Babylonians and we're going to die terrible deaths. It's going to be a terrible time of starvation. You know, and you think about it, in the siege that came upon Jerusalem, it was such a terrible siege that the people were dying of starvation. And they were even going to the extreme of eating their own children. And because they were starving to death. And it's hard for us to comprehend that. But God told Jeremiah, listen, it's better off for you not to be married. I don't want your family to have to go through that. Plus, it was a teaching illustration to the rest of the people of what was coming. Because remember, the main thing that the people were struggling with, Jeremiah would say, judgment's coming. He'd say, "Oh, Jeremiah, be quiet. You've been preaching that for years. You don't know what you're talking about. There's not judgment coming. God's going to deliver us from the Babylonians. This is going to be all right. It's okay." And they were continually opposing him on that matter. And so God was helping them to see through different illustrations that came in his life. You know, it's very sad that the sins of parents often bring misery upon their children. And we saw that there. And also, likewise, the sins of children bring grief and sorrow to their parents. And, you know, we do not live unto ourselves. That's a big thing we need to remember. Sometimes we get this idea that, well, what I do is my business and I don't want to affect anybody. No, we all affect somebody. You know, there's always somebody. You know, you think about one thing that really sticks out in our mind, and I don't think that's happened to any of us, so I'm not trying to stir up emotions. But, you know, when a person takes their life or commits suicide, they're only thinking of themselves. But the family suffers so much. Every part of the family suffers through that. It's a difficult, terrible time. And people have great anxiety because of that. And so it is. So we really affect each other, not just ourselves. Proverbs 17:25 says, "A foolish son is a grief to his father and bitterness to her that bare him." Right? So the foolishness of that son does impact his father and his mother. and a very important truth there for us to see. So first of all, Jeremiah was told not to marry. Secondly, God tells him not to mourn. Look at verse 5. It says, "For thus saith the Lord, enter not into the house of mourning, neither go to lament, nor bemoan them. For I have taken away my peace from this people, saith the Lord, even loving kindness and mercies. Both the great and the small shall die in the land." Down to verse 7. "Neither shall the men tear themselves for them in mourning, to comfort them for the dead." All right, so he says here, don't cry over them. Don't lament over them. So God gave him a very specific command here that he was not to mourn and weep over them, because God told him this is going to happen. He said, this is part of my judgment. This is what's going to happen. Yet judgment cannot be avoided. And you know, that is one of the things that the devil would like us to forget, is that sin always brings consequences. And the people had turned their back on God for generations, and it had gotten to a peak where God says, that can't go any longer. They're going to have to be destroyed. And who was it? I'll pick your brain a little bit. Which one of the kings was it that God said, that's the last straw?
Manasseh.
It was Manasseh. Manasseh, the son of Hezekiah. God said, that's it. And even though Manasseh got right with God in the end, the damage that he did because of all the evil in his early reign, God said, I cannot overlook it. I've got to judge Judah for what they've done. And they've turned their back on God. And so God says, don't mourn, don't cry over them. But then God gives them a third thing. He says, first of all, don't marry. Secondly, don't mourn. And thirdly, he says, don't be merry. Don't be merry. All right, different than being married. Don't be merry. All right, in verse number 8, he says, thou shalt not go into the house of feasting to sit with them to eat and drink. For thus saith the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, behold, I will cause to cease out of this place in your eyes and in your days the voice of mirth and the voice of gladness and the voice of the bridegroom and the voice of the bride. All right, so he says, I don't want you rejoicing with them. I don't want you going to their feasts and parties with them. No happy times, Jeremiah, because it's not going to be a happy time. Judgment's coming. And, you know, when the people ask, why are you doing this? Look at on verse number 10. It says, and it came to pass that when thou shalt show this people all these words, and they say unto thee, wherefore, or in other words, why hath the Lord pronounced all this great evil against us? Or what is our iniquity? Or what is our sin that we have committed against the Lord our God? Then thou shalt say unto them, behold, your fathers have forsaken me, saith the Lord, and have walked after other gods, and have served them, and have worshipped them, and have forsaken me, and have not kept my law. Then look at 12. And ye have done worse than your fathers. Right. So he says, they forsook me, they turned their back on me, they did all these evil things, and you've done worse than your fathers. You've corrupted yourself worse than they have. And so he said, this is why there's no happiness, no joy, no mirth. We're not to be celebrating and being happy, because this is not good. Judgment is coming. And, you know, the people were trying to pretend that it wasn't coming. They were trying to pretend that everything was okay. Even though the Babylonians were camped outside of the city, you know, the false prophets were saying, it'll be okay. Nebuchadnezzar is going to change his mind. He's going to send all the people back. All of the things they stole from us are going to come back. It's going to be okay. And Jeremiah said, it's not going to be okay. It's not going to be okay. There's no time for being joyful. There's no sense in mourning over it, because God's already made up his mind. But the judgment is coming. And so a very serious situation that they found themselves in. Then we find down in verse number 16 that God talks about judgment. And he talks about how there's going to be fishers and hunters coming after them. Verse 16. Behold, I will send many fishers unto, saith the Lord, and they shall fish them. And after I will send many hunters, and they shall hunt them from every mountain and from every hill and out of the holes in the rocks. Right? So God says, you can't hide on me. You're not going to be able to run and hide and think that somehow I won't find you. You're going to go into judgment. Judgment is coming, and God's going to find you, and you're not going to be able to escape. I'm going to send fishers out to the fish for you, and hunters to go out and hunt for you. You're not going to escape this judgment. Judgment is coming. You know, one of the most important things that we can learn about God is who He is, who God is. Very important for us to see that. We see down as we continue reading there in verse number 21, it says, "Therefore, behold, I will this once cause them to know, I will cause them to know mine, cause them to know mine hand and my might, and they shall know that my name is the Lord." Now, why would God say that? They will know that my name is Jehovah. Why would he say that? Well, I believe it's because you think about what does the word Jehovah mean? Jehovah is God's name that is his self-existence and his eternal being and is his name that must be feared. All right? And so when he said, "I want you to know that I am Jehovah," he's saying, "I want you to know that I am the self-existent eternal one that needs to be feared. And you need to fear me. And you're going to understand this because of what I'm going to do. I have got the power over all things. And I'm going to send Nebuchadnezzar. He's going to wipe you out. He's going to destroy you. And you're not listening to me. You won't heed this. And you won't change your ways. Judgment is coming very seriously." And so, chapter 16, all about the restrictions on Jeremiah and God's judgment that was coming their way. Then chapter 17, we see here Judah's sins, Jeremiah's persecution, and the Sabbath reminder in chapter 17. So we start out in verse number 1 of 17. "The sin of Judah is written with a pen of iron and with the point of a diamond. It is engraved upon the table of their heart and upon the horns of their altar." Now, notice this. This is a significant thing. You know, people that say, "Oh, people of the ancient days were a bunch of barbarians, you know, lived in caves, and they were a bunch of idiots and don't know what they're doing." I mean, way back in those days there, I mean, we're talking about several hundred years before the time of Christ. They knew about cutting diamonds. They knew how to use diamonds to engrave. And they were using these diamonds and iron to engrave indelible words in things. And they were, he says he was going to use it to engrave in the tables of their hearts and the horns of the altar. The idea here is there's going to be permanent engravings here. And God's saying, this isn't going to change. This is something that I want you to see. It's not going to change. You're not going to be able to get away from this. What I said is going to come to pass. You're not going to be able to just erase it and wipe it out. In verse number 4, he says, "I will cause thee to serve thine enemies in the land." And then down in verse number 5, he says, "Thus saith the Lord, cursed be man that trusteth in man and maketh flesh his arm, and whose heart departeth from the Lord." God hates it when we trust men instead of trusting him. And you know, we tend to do that as well. You know, we tend to trust men instead of trusting God. You know, we get sick and we run to the doctor instead of running to God in prayer. Now, I'm not saying you shouldn't go to the doctor, right? I'm not saying, you know, trusting men or seeking men's help in things is wrong. That's not it at all. But he wants us to turn to God first. And he wants us to get on our face before God. And they are trusting in men and believing what these false prophets are teaching them. And they're trusting in Egypt. And when they get into trouble, they're writing letters to Egypt and to other places to try to get help to come in and help them instead of getting on their knees and praying, "God, we need you." And you remember when Hezekiah prayed and saw God's help, what did God do? God wiped out the army of the enemies and helped them greatly. But then others that didn't seek the Lord, God just said, "All right, if you're not going to seek me, all right, have it your way." And God didn't help them. And so we truly need to seek God first and before we go running to men to find our help in times of trouble. And in all this, God again offers them hope. Look at verse number 7. "Blessed is the man that trusteth in the Lord and whose hope is in the Lord." In whose hope the Lord is. "And he shall be as a tree planted by the waters, and that spreadeth out her roots by the river, and shall not see that when the heat cometh, but her leaf shall be green, and shall not be careful in the year of drought, neither shall cease from yielding fruit." Now, what does that remind you of?
Psalm 1.
Very good. Psalm 1. It sounds a lot like Psalm 1. And God was telling them that they could be like a fruitful tree. And so God is offering them hope. He says, all through Jeremiah's writings, especially today, I was digging into some of the later chapters preparing for the future. And he spent a whole two chapters or three chapters just telling them, God's got all these great plans for you. God is not against Israel. He's against their sin. And so it is with us. God is not against us, but he is against our sin. And so he wants us to do what is right. And he wants us to please him with our lives. Verse number 9, the heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked. Who can know it? A verse you need marked in your Bible. A great verse to use during witnessing and things like that. The heart is deceitful and desperately wicked. The word desperately wicked there is one Hebrew word that refers to malignant. He said, your heart is desperately wicked. It's malignant. You can't fix it. You're not going to get it right because your heart is full of sin. And then verse number 10, I, the Lord, search the heart. I try the reins. All right, what are the reins?
That kind of controls that go to the bridle of the mount, like this leads.
Not these kind of reins. What kind of reins is this talking about? Nope.
How do you spell it?
R-E-I-N-S. Sure.
Like the rein of the king?
Nope. All right, it's referring to your kidneys. The renals, the reins, all right? Adrenals, the renals, reins, it's your kidneys. All right, so just like it talks about your heart, you know, search your heart and your kidneys, we look at it and say, that's weird. But, I mean, we use the same kind of terminology today. We'd say, oh, I love them with all my heart. Thump, 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 thump. You know, and not really, not our thumper heart. And they would use the same thing talking about their kidneys. It was their inner organs. And it referred to them as their innermost being. All right? So it wasn't literally their kidneys, but he was talking about the insides of me. All right? I, the Lord, search the heart. I try the reins, even to give every man according to his ways and according to the fruit of his doings. All right? So God says, I search people, and I know their hearts. I know what is going on in them. And God is always just and always fair. You know, that is one of the great things about our God, is that because he is omniscient and knows everything, God never makes a mistake when he's judging and trying. He knows all the facts. He's got all the information. And when he judges, it's always just. You know, that's not true in human judgment. You know, even if you have a good judge that's trying their best, still sometimes they make mistakes because we can't see all the internal facts. And you can't really tell whether someone's telling the whole truth or lying to you. You can evaluate it and think, oh, you know, all the information looks like he's telling the truth, and he may not be. But God knows all the facts. And that's very important. It's good because we know we'll always get a fair trial with God, but it's also convicting because you're not going to get away with anything because he knows it all. He knows us very well. Remember there in Hebrews 4:12 where he says, it talks about he knows the word of God is quick and powerful and sharper than any two-edged sword, piercing even to the dividing asunder of soul and spirit and of the joints and marrow, and is a discerner of the thoughts and intents of the heart. I mean, God knows us inside out. So he knows all about us. And Jeremiah then asked God to intervene for him and to help him against his persecutors. Verse number 15 to 18, I've circled this in my Bible here. Behold, they say unto me, where is the word of the Lord? Let it come now. As for me, I have not hastened from being a pastor to follow thee, neither have I desired the woeful day. Thou knowest that which came out of my lips was right before thee. Be not a terror unto me. Thou art my hope in the day of evil. And then verse 18, let them be confounded or put to shame that persecute me. Let me not me be confounded. Let them be dismayed, but let not me be dismayed. bring upon them the day of evil and destroy them with the double destruction. All right, so Jeremiah is just, you know, he's saying, Lord, I've told them what you told me to tell them. And now they're attacking me. They're giving me a hard time. Lord, just deal with them. Would you please deal with them? And, you know, he was frustrated with that because he was constantly being persecuted. And this time it doesn't say exactly what all took place. It might have been more verbal here, but in some cases, you know, they put him in prison. They put him in the dungeon. They put him in the stocks. They beat him. They were very cruel to Jeremiah. And so he just begs God to just deal with the situation. And then chapter 17, verses 19 to 27, God rebukes them for their failure to keep the Sabbath. Now remember, the Sabbath was given to the Jews. And you can read that throughout the Old Testament. It's very clear. And I know people that want to make us Sabbath keepers today try to say, no, it's not the Jews. But very many places in the Bible, it clearly says God gave the Sabbath to the Jews. Right? And here he speaks to them, and he says down in verse number 19, go and stand in the gate of the children of the people, whereby the kings of Judah come in, and by which they go out, and in the gates of Jerusalem, and say unto them, hear ye the word of the Lord, ye kings of Judah and all Judah and all the inhabitants of Jerusalem that enter in by these gates. Thus saith the Lord, take heed to yourselves, bear no burden on the Sabbath day, nor bring it in by the gates of Jerusalem, neither carry forth burdens out of your houses on the Sabbath day, neither do ye any work, but hallow ye the Sabbath day as I commanded your fathers. All right? Now, God told them that as Jews that they were to keep the Sabbath day special and that they weren't to disgrace it. It was a day set aside for rest. And here they weren't doing that, and God rebukes them for that, spends the rest of the chapter really dealing with that very same thing as he was trying to get them to understand that they had failed him, and that was one of the ways they had failed him. Now, as we move on to chapter 18, we find here Judah is as a potter's clay. Alright? Judah's like a potter's clay. In verse number 2 of 18, arise and go down to the potter's house, and there I will cause thee to hear my words. Then I went down to the potter's house, and behold, he wrought a work on the wheels. And the vessel that he made of clay was marred in the hand of the potter. So he made it again, another vessel, as it seemed good to the potter to make it. Then the word of the Lord came to me, saying, O house of Israel, cannot I do with you as is this potter, says the Lord. Behold, as the clay is in the potter's hand, so are ye in mine hand, O house of Israel. All right, so what's God saying here? He's saying, the potter, when he's turning things on the wheel there and making this pot, and something goes wrong, maybe his finger slips and pokes a hole in it, or maybe there's a speck of dirt in it that he didn't find earlier, and he says, this is never going to do. He can take that thing, squash it all down, and start all over again. And he's got the right to do that. It's his clay, it's his wheel, it's his job, he can do what he wants. And God said, Israel's my clay, and I can do what I want. And if I am not happy with what is happening right now in your lives, I can reform it and remold it and make it into something else. And you know, God can do that in our lives as well. You know, maybe God has a plan for us and we do something that has marred God's plan. And God can take that clay and remold it and make it into something else for His glory. Now, it may not be the same thing as He would have done the first time. Probably won't be. But God can still use us. We should never feel like I have failed God so badly that I'm useless and that God can never use me again. Well, He may not be able to use us in the same way, but God doesn't just throw us out in the heap. He says, I'll remold you into something else. I'll make something out of you to make you so that you can give me some glory. And God wants us to remember that no matter what happens, if we'll humble ourselves before God and confess our sins and get right with God, God can remold and make it again in some other way into some kind of a vessel that can bring glory and honor to Him. And that's what God desires in every one of our lives. And so the potter's clay, a very important lesson for us. God can do as He pleases. And we may not always understand His ways, but we must learn to trust His judgments. You know, we might say, you know, God, why are You molding me like You are? And we may not understand that. But God knows what He's doing, and we need to trust Him. Now, the people refused to change their evil hearts. Look at verse number 11. Verse number 11, "Now therefore go and speak to the men of Judah and to the inhabitants of Jerusalem, saying, Thus saith the Lord, Behold, I framed evil against you and devised a device against you. Return ye now every one from his evil way and make your ways and your doings good." And they said, notice what they said, verse 12, "There is no hope, but we will walk after our own devices and we will everyone do the imagination of his evil heart." They're pretty blunt with God. They said, there's no hope. We're not going to change. We're going to keep on doing what we've been doing. We like what we're doing, and we're going to keep on doing what we're doing. And so Jeremiah, you know, this is the congregation Jeremiah's been preaching to. And they say, I don't care what you say, Jeremiah, we're not going to change. We've got our mind made up. We like what we're doing. We're not going to change. And so Jeremiah perseveres against all these obstacles. And the people again persecute Jeremiah. Verse number 18. "Then said they, Come, let us devise devices against Jeremiah, for the law shall not perish from the priest, nor the counsel from the wise, nor the word from the prophet. Come, and let us smite him with the tongue, and let us not give heed to any of his words. Give heed to me, O Lord, and hearken to the voice of them that contend with me. Shall evil be recompensed for good? For they have digged a pit for my soul. Remember, I stood before thee to speak good for them, and turn away thy wrath from them. Therefore, deliver up their children to famine, and pour out their blood by force of the sword, and let their wives be bereaved of their children and be widows, and let their men be put to death, and let their young men be slain with the sword. Let a cry be heard from their houses when they shall bring a troop suddenly upon them, for they have digged a pit to take me and hid snares for my feet. Yet, Lord, thou knowest all their counsel against me to slay me. Forgive not their iniquity, neither blot out their sin from thy sight, but let them be overthrown before thee. Deal thus with them in the time of thine anger." So Jeremiah is really frustrated. He says, I've been doing right. I've been preaching the truth. I've told them what you wanted me to tell them, and all they do is oppose me. They attack me. They try to kill me. They try to hurt me. And God, I just deal with them. But it wasn't God's timing yet. Time was coming. God was going to deal with them. And as we proceed, you know, the years will pass, and the time of judgment was drawing closer and closer. They were within the last few years of the judgment, before judgment was to come, and the people still wouldn't listen. They would not hear him. And then on into chapter 19, we find here that God gives another parable of a broken clay bottle. Verse number 1. He says, "And thus saith the Lord, Go and get a potter's earthen bottle, and take of the ancients of the people and of the ancients of the priests, and go forth unto the valley of the son of Hinnom, which is by the entry of the east gate, and proclaim there the words that I shall tell thee." All right, now, let's just stop and think together. All right? He took a clay pot, similar to this one, a bottle of some sort, a clay pot, and he took it with him down to the valley of Hinnom, and he invited all these elders, the older men of the city. Now, the valley of Hinnom, what do we know about the valley of Hinnom? The valley of Hinnom was south of Jerusalem. It went east and west, south of Jerusalem, underneath the city. Not underneath, but I mean below the city. And as the valley went across it, the valley of Hinnom was where they would go and worship Moloch and other of the false gods and Baal. And it was there that they had idols that, you know, that had their hands out, and they built a big fire inside of this idol that was made of iron or brass, and it would turn red hot, and then they'd lay their little babies on them and let them roll into the fire. Disgusting. But that took place in the Valley of Hinnom. Again and again and again and again. And God said, that never entered into my mind. That revolts me. I am against it. And so Jeremiah has taken them down to the Valley of Hinnom, and he's meeting with them. And we see in the end of verse 3, behold, I will bring evil upon this place, which whosoever heareth his ears shall tingle, because they have forsaken me and have estranged this place and have burned incense unto other gods, in whom neither they nor their fathers have known, nor the kings of Judah, and have filled this place with the blood of the innocent. Right, those little babes. They have built also high places of Baal and burned their sons with fire for the burnt offerings unto the Baal, and which have I commanded not, nor spake, neither came it into my mind. Therefore, behold, the days come, saith the Lord, that this place shall no more be called Tophet, nor the Valley of Hinnom, but the Valley of Slaughter. So Jeremiah is down there with them, and then he broke his vessel. Okay, verse number 10, and then shalt thou break the bottle in the sight of the men that go with thee, and thou shalt say unto them, thus saith the Lord of hosts, even so will I break this piece of people and this city, as one breaketh the potter's vessel that cannot be made whole again, and they shall bury them in Tophet till there be no place to bury. All right, so God says, he smashed his bottle, and all these little pieces went everywhere, and he says, God's going to do the same thing with you. He's going to smash you to pieces, and you're never going to be able to be put back together the same way again. And he says, they're going to bury so many people in the Valley of Tophet that there won't be any place to bury anymore. He says, there's going to be a huge slaughter when God deals with this. And so God was pouring out his wrath upon them. And then down in verse number 14 and 15, we see that then he preached to them in the court of the house of the Lord. Verse 14, and then Jeremiah came from Tophet, whither the Lord had sent him to prophesy, and he stood in the court of the house, the Lord's house, and said unto all the people, thus saith the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, behold, I will bring upon this city and upon all her towns all the evil that I have pronounced against them, because they have hardened their neck, and they might not hear my words. See, once again, God's saying, one of the worst things we can do is to refuse to listen to him. They've hardened their neck. We're not going to listen. Don't tell me. I don't want to hear about it. And you know, when God pricks our hearts or speaks to us through the word or through preaching, and we sit there and say, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to listen to that. That's not what I'm going to do. We're hardening our heart just like Israel did. And God says, judgment's coming whether you harden your heart or not. But I'm willing and want to be merciful if you will humble yourselves before me. But they wouldn't listen. Then we jump into chapter 20. There's more persecution for Jeremiah, and it's getting worse. Now Pashur, the son of Imler, the priest, who was of the chief, who was also the chief governor of the house of the Lord, so he's a spiritual leader among the people, supposedly, heard that Jeremiah prophesied these things. And Pashur smote Jeremiah, the prophet, and put him in stocks that there were that were in the high gate of Benjamin, which was by the house of the Lord. Now, as I did a little bit of digging and researching on this, several commentators made comment on this situation. Says that Pashur hit him and put him in stocks. Ryrie, in his commentary, believes that Pashur smote him with the 40 lashes that were described in Deuteronomy 25:3. That's a possibility. It doesn't say anything about how much he hit him, but he could have given him the 40 lashes of the whip that was prescribed in Deuteronomy 25:3. These stocks, though, often caused the person to be upside down in posture in a miserable torment. And Haley's Bible handbook tells us that the stocks consisted of a wooden frame in which the feet and the neck and the hands were fastened so that as to hold the body in a distorted and painful position. And Ryrie adds to that, he says, the stocks secured the feet and the hands and the neck, bending the body in the most, almost double. So it was some twisted, distorted fashion, whatever was very uncomfortable and painful. And they would lock their hands and their neck and their feet in these things and just leave them there. Miserable, painful place. And Jeremiah got stuck in these stocks. And they left him in there overnight. So he spent the night in these painful stocks. Then Jeremiah pronounced God's judgment upon pasture, verse number 4. For thus saith the Lord, behold, I will make this thee a terror to thyself and to all thy friends, and they shall fall by the sword of their enemies. Thine eyes shall behold it, and I will give all Judah into the hand of the king of Babylon, and he shall carry them captive into Babylon, and shall slay them with the sword. Moreover, I will deliver all the strength of this city, and all the labor thereof, and all the precious things thereof, and all the treasures of the kings of Judah, and I will give it into the hand of their enemies, and they shall spoil them, and shall take them, and carry them to Babylon. And thou, Pasher, right, this priest, this troublemaker, and all that dwell in thine house shall go into captivity, and thou shalt come to Babylon, and there thou shalt die, and shalt be buried there, thou and all thy friends to whom thou hast prophesied lies. Jeremiah's a bold guy. He had a difficult task. It's hard to stand up to somebody that's right in your face and has put you in the stocks and to stand up to them and say, listen, you listen to what God's going to say. You're going to go to Babylon. You're going to die there, which was something that they dreaded the thought of, dying in a pagan land. And you're going to be buried there. You're not going to be buried here among our people. And God's going to destroy you and your whole family because of what you've done, because you've prophesied lies. And then they continue the persecution against Jeremiah. Verse 7, O Lord, thou hast deceived me. I was deceived. Thou art stronger than I, and hast prevailed. I am in derision daily. Everyone mocketh me. For since I spake, I cried out. I cried violence and spoil, because the word of the Lord was made a reproach unto me, and a derision daily. Then I said, I will not make mention of him, nor speak any more of his name. But his word was in mine heart as a burning fire shut up in my bones. And I was weary of forbearing, and I could not stay. Jeremiah said, Lord, I give up. I'm not going to do it anymore. I'm not going to preach anymore. I can't say it anymore because I was in torment in those stocks. I can't put up with this anymore. But he said, it was like a burning in my a fire burning in my soul. I can't keep quiet. I gotta say it. Because God told me I gotta say it. So Jeremiah kept on preaching, even though deep down inside he didn't want to. He knew he had to. And he continues on. And he goes on down through much of the rest of the chapter, speaking of his persecution and the difficulties and the troubles and the hardships that he faced. Down in verse 13, sing unto the Lord, praise ye the Lord. Verse 14, cursed be the day wherein I was born. Let not the day wherein my mother bare me be blessed. Cursed be the man who brought tidings to my father, saying, a man-child is born unto thee, making him very glad. And let that man be as the cities which the Lord overthrew and repented not. And let him hear the cry of the morning and of the shout of the noonday, because he slew me not from the womb. Oh, that my mother might have been my grave, and that her womb be always great with me. Wherefore came I forth out of the womb to see labor and sorrow, that my days should be consumed with shame. Jeremiah's grieving. He's in torment. He's, you know, being in those stocks. I mean, he may have written these words or said these words when he was spending that night in those stocks. It was a terrible thing. And you know, we cannot fully imagine, unless we've been through something like that, how heart, how miserable that was. You know, sometimes we feel a little bit that way when, you know, we get a bad cold or we get the flu or we just get really sick and it's at a bad inconvenient time. But Jeremiah's being tormented and they're out to get him. He says, God, I can't keep up with this anymore. I give up, but I can't. I got to keep saying it. And then he wishes he never would have been born. Sounds like Job. And I wish I never would have been born. Should have died when I was a babe. But God saw fit to help him through it. And you know, it just shows us that sometimes God allows tough times in our lives. For things that we didn't do wrong. For reasons we don't understand. But God allows difficulties to come. And when those difficulties come, we need to remember God doesn't make any mistakes. God knows what He's doing. He knows what is right. And God always does in our lives what is best for us. Sometimes we cause our own problems. Sometimes the troubles come upon us because someone else did wrong. But no matter what the situation is, we need to trust the Lord. And Jeremiah here, he made it through this difficult time and he goes on to preach the rest of the book and carries on for many more years yet to come. But it was difficult at times. And there's going to be difficult times in your life and in mine when we think, you know, life is too hard. It's too difficult. It's too painful. Too complicated. And we feel like quitting. But that's not the answer. We just need to rest in the Lord and realize God knows what's best. I need to trust God. And it's easier to say than it is to do. No question about that. But that is the right thing. We know that's the right thing. We need to trust God. And Jeremiah eventually does. He gets out of this. And he carries on, presses on for the Lord, and we need to do the same thing. So tonight as we ponder these things that we've looked at here, we've looked at the parables and the persecution, Jeremiah's restrictions, Judah's sins and Jeremiah's persecution and the Sabbath reminder. We saw that Judah is the potter's clay, and that Judah will be as the broken clay bottle. And then all the problems and persecution that Jeremiah has, some of the most difficult and discouraging times of persecution that he goes through here, but yet there's a lot more persecution to come. And God helps him through it all. So let's just keep our eyes on the Lord and remember that no matter what comes our way, God's in control. God will take care of us if we'll rest in Him and trust Him.